Morning, my name is Joseph Crawford, and today I'm going to be telling you about phenotypic traits of switchgrass cultivars associated with increases in biomass yield. Today I'd like to begin by asking a few very simple questions. Where is the biomass in a field of switchgrass? And what's the difference between 6 megagrams per hectare and 15 megagrams per hectare? In other words, where is the plant accumulating biomass? And over a historical period, where have we been selecting to get more biomass? Historically, switchgrass has been grown as a forage crop, but within the last 15 years, it has transitioned to a biomass energy crop. So there's a different emphasis on what's being selected for. Switchgrass is a native C4 perennial grass. And within the species, there's two very distinct ecotypes of upland and lowland, with the lowlands being more productive in the southern latitudes. And so with that, biomass production is associated with the latitude of origin, and of course with tiller density and tiller mass, the idea being have more tillers, more heavier tillers will give you higher biomass yield. But it's slightly more complicated than that because if we consider the tiller, the basic unit of a switchgrass field, there's a subunit of the phytomer. And a phytomer consists of a node, an inner node, a leaf sheath, and a leaf blade, as you can see in this cartoon. So when switchgrass tillers, they sequentially produce these phytomers, and they accumulate biomass throughout the growing season, but at different rates. And an important distinction between swards of switchgrass and spaced plants is very important. A few publications have come out within the last couple years about plant selections in plant breeding schemes based on swards versus spaced plants. So, I mean, obviously, a spaced plant nursery is not limited by space. It doesn't have competition with other plants next to it. So it has a larger phenotype than might expect. But when you put that into a sward, you see something completely different. And this matters of when you evaluate experimental lines, it has to be on the sward level, although this takes a longer time. But if you don't, you could have confusing results or less dramatic changes than you think you're getting through breeding. So, going back to those questions, my objectives for this talk are to observe the yield components or phenotypic traits of a gradient of switchgrass cultivars planted on the sward level in a common garden with uniform seeding. And then secondly, I'd like to compare the improved varieties with a source-identified cultivar and dissect for exactly which traits may have increased. And so this map shows where the origins of the plant materials I used for the study, and the color of the dot is the type upland or lowland, and you can see from some of these, like Canlow is a source-identified population, and I'd like to make special mention of Blade EG1102, which is the first cultivar to be really selected for biomass. Most of these others have traditionally been for forage. And then I'd also like to make special mention of the Canlow by Summer hybrid, which is actually a unique upland-lowland hybrid, but also specifically selected for biomass. So this is part of a larger multi-location experiment, but I'm looking at just Urbana, Illinois. And so our field design, we chose 9 varieties out of the 20 that are in it, and it is a randomized incomplete block design with 4 blocks, and we had successful establishment with 2, and there are 2, 4, or 5 replications per treatment. And this was the initial design, but the consequences of this will be that some comparisons will be better than others. And it's also important to note that I analyzed this intentionally as a completely randomized design rather than a randomized block design. And I can talk more about that if there's any questions. So throughout the second growing season, we measure multiple phenotypic traits in each of these sward plots. We count reproductive and vegetative tillers and the phytomers on them, and we weigh the individual tillers, and we take a plot yield, a final plot yield with a combine. And just because we're using multiple variables, it's important to do multivariate analysis of variance, which is just, to me, a diagnostic check, which is highly significant. So the ANOVA results actually show that the most interesting thing is the thing that is not significant. If you look at the top of the list, total tiller density among these 9 cultivars planted at uniform density is not significant. And of course, I mean, this is kind of obvious that they were planted at uniform density, but these plants traditionally in other publications show strong differences in tillering, the uplands showing much more tillering than the lowlands. But here in this, at uniform seeding, we find the total tiller density is not significant, and it's not a yield component. But as you can see in the other things in the list, the phytomer count, the number of phytomers on the tiller is significant, as well as tiller mass and grams per phytomer. And additionally, flag leaf length, leaf width, and field height, heading date, and biomass yield were all significant. And so I'm going to show in these next couple graphs the correlation of these traits with biomass yield. As you can see, tiller mass, as tiller mass increases, biomass increases as well. This is very obvious. But if you look at the distribution of the hybrids, they fall directly in between the uplands and the lowlands. If you can, the ecotype legend on the side, please note where they fall in this distribution. And so also grams per phytomer increases, and as well as heading date. Presumably heading date is more radiation in the growing season, you get higher biomass yield. So I'd like to transition to my second objective, which is dissecting traits that have increased through selection. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to compare a source-identified cultivar and a new variety that is selected specifically for high biomass and spring vigor. And I'm going to use principal components, which I think are a comprehensive tool for evaluation of sward plots. And I just want to talk about this just a little bit, that usually principal components are a data reduction technique, a multivariate data reduction technique. But in my analysis, the first principal component was actually a very balanced average of all of my variables that I measured. So in a way, the principal component one gives me a very nuanced look at the intricacies of yield that might not come out in individual measurements. And so you can see in this simple graph, the principal component one is very highly tightly correlated to biomass yield, and it's very useful in the analysis. And so this is principal component one plotted against principal component two. And I want to walk you through it because some interesting things come up. The first is that the overall phenotype is comprehensively described between the the uplands, which are in blue over here, and the red, the hybrids, falls directly in between, and then the lowlands over here. And the second thing I'd like to show is that that the CanLow, the original source-identified population, has a broad genotypic pool and shows that in the principal components, that it has a broad phenotypic characterization using these principal components. And the last thing I'd like to show is these blade varieties that were selected out of CanLow have kind of diverged from the original source-identified population, which would we expect, right? So these have been selected for. And so I'm going to hone in on that. I'm going to zoom in on these lowlands, and I'm going to do contrasts between a source-identified cultivar and a biomass cultivar. And since one was selected out of the genetic pool of the other, I think these are very comparable. And so the first thing to look at is that the biomass yield difference between these two is significant. So the improved variety, thankfully, is higher yielding than the original that it was selected out of. And also, the heading date has increased by only a few days, but this was enough to accumulate more biomass to make the biomass yield different. Just a few days. However, if you look over here to the right, flag leaf length was really the only variable that I measured that was statistically significantly different between the two. And it's quite a big difference between the leaves, which I found interesting. So, and then lastly, principal component one was significantly different between these two. And I think this is interesting because the principal component is capturing the intricacies of yield that the other variables didn't have the power to capture. And so for objective one, for a diverse gradient of switchgrass cultivars planted at a uniform density, tiller density did not differ among the cultivars and did not affect biomass yield. But at the sward level, tiller mass, plant height, and phytomere count mass were important traits and were tightly correlated with yield. And then in my second objective, when you compare a source-identified population and an improved cultivar, only heading date has increased. And they seem to be the same for other yield components, which is sort of mysterious. And lastly, the principal components can accurately and comprehensively describe switchgrass phenotypes. And I think this has a lot of efficacy for evaluation of sward plots and progeny tests in the future. And indeed, it has been done before when switchgrass was a forage crop. Principal components and factor analysis were used to, they were correlated with gains made through selection indices. So this isn't new, and it's a proven thing. I'd like to thank Michael Kassler and SenUSA for input and making us part of this project, and I'd also like to thank Dr. Arvid Bowe for his input. I'd be happy to take any questions if we have time.
All right, we have about a minute and a half for questions. Out of curiosity, you mentioned that you had different numbers of reps. I wondered if that was a seed source limitation or if there was some other experimental consideration that led to that.
Yeah, I believe the limitation was seeds because these were heavily seeded to get good establishment. I don't think for me, I only got two reps of certain things, but since this is broadly spread out across the country, it was important to have that. So they have Mike Kassler has the power, the statistical power because of so many locations, but my individual location didn't have as much replication.
If there are any differences among the locations on the end results?
That's a great question, and I'm sure there will be, but I don't have access to that data. Yeah.